Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Mulman, and this is the My View Matters radio network. We're without co-host Dave again tonight. As far as I know, he may call in, but I'm pretty sure he's busy tonight, so we're on our own. If you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we're back to trying to use Skype to do this, so we'll see how this works. If it's really, really choppy, I apologize, and hopefully somebody will in the chat room alert me that it's awful if it is awful. All right, well, to get started, as we do every week, we start with a random political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where Somali pirates and Mexican drug mules can make a mockery of our basic democratic principles. I couldn't even hold my face straight while I was saying that. So anyway, I like the rhetoric generator. For the spurious correlation, let's see, this week's spurious correlation, the number of lawyers in Washington, D.C. correlates with the deaths caused by inhalation of and ingestion of food causing obstruction of the respiratory tract, basically people choking. So the number of lawyers in D.C. correlates with the number of people who choke to death. Obviously not causation there. And again, that's, our little thing we do to remind people that correlation is not causation. I wanted to get started on a little bit different note this week. As many of you know, I'm all about IT for a living. I work in IT, and there's some interesting stuff with some of the new machines out there. One of the interesting things that's been kind of a growing craze for 2 years are the mini computers. Basically, it's you have in your cell phone now. And I think that's pretty interesting because, I've ruled about how our cell phones are actually more protected than a regular phone used to be because now there is so much information on a cell phone. And I think that's probably a good ruling. That's something that needs to happen because otherwise you end up in this weird gray area. Literally, these mini PCs are the same thing. They're a small piece of machinery that is essentially the same hardware that's in your cell phone, but they are computers. And so the Supreme Court has kind of drawn a line there for us and said, okay, no, these cell phones, these smartphones have moved too far into the realm of computer and aren't just subject to immediate search. So that was a good ruling. I think it's kind of interesting, though, and something that we're going to see more of, something I've talked to a lot of people about, it are the changes coming to IT. I think that we're going to see a lot more automation. I think we're going to see a lot less of the repetitive job. And I think it's going to be very interesting to watch this happen because what it's going to mean is that there's going to be a need for even fewer jobs. And that could have a pretty significant effect on the economy. Obviously, there will still need to be people who can work on these computers, but for the most part, it's mostly commodity-based hardware, nothing real fancy about it. Doesn't cost a lot of money. With Raspberry Pi is most popular, and it is only like $35, or maybe it's $45 now. I don't know, but it's really, really, really big stuff. And so I don't think that it's really unfathomable. Well, and I guess I should add on, too, even the bigger stuff. Hey, we're virtualizing all these. What used to take an actual physical machine is now taking up part of a machine, and it is virtualized, and it is redundant, and it is able to fail over automatically if there's a failure. And so your failure times, your downtimes are limited very much to basically nothing. There's not a need for 24/7 support anymore on the hardware side because, quite honestly, it'll work till morning. Who cares? And I think that's going to be a very interesting change, a very interesting shift in IT that's going to cause a ripple as far as employment goes. Now, obviously, we talk a lot about other things that cause unemployment. And people will say, well, this is bad. This is horrible. Well, it is bad in a way. Any rapid change can be difficult. But at the same time, changes occur because of consumer demand. Changes that occur because of natural changes in advancements in technology aren't necessarily a bad thing. We don't need to bring back the telegraph because the telegraph operators were significantly harmed by the end of the telegraph. We don't need to bring back the Pony Express because the post office, well, actually, the Pony Express went out before the post office, but regardless, the point is that protectionism isn't the answer. What we need to be doing is staying on our toes as people, trying to stay ahead of whatever's coming next, and be aware that changes always come, and always try to have one or two, what's the word I'm looking for, one or two options if you need to bail out. And, you know, there may come a point, no matter how secure you are or think you are in your job, that you're going to need to bail out. And that's okay. It happens. And, of course, there are other times when you hang on too long and the employer decides to bail you out for you, lay you off, get you the old pink slip. And so staying ahead of the pink slip is really the goal, or should be, in your professional career. And so I guess my point is that there's a really big difference between changes that are happening or not happening because of external forces, things that aren't correct, right? Government or people really tweaking or messing with markets through fraudulent or fraudulently manipulative measures. They're bad. But as far as changing because of technology, those are typically being good, and at times they can be a little bumpy. But I think that that's a good thing, and I'm I don't know. I don't really know why I even really talk about that tonight, but it's just something I've been thinking about a lot lately that I'd share with you. Here. Yes, yeah, so last week we talked about immigration for it. I, of course, did not cover everything. I got some feedback. Oh, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? Folks, I told you at the very beginning of the conversation, immigration is a complex issue. It doesn't fit on a bumper sticker. It doesn't fit, you know, anywhere outside of a true debate. An hour is not long enough, not close, to really dig into the issue and understand what's driving all of the different problems. We've heard about the ads that were being run in Mexico now, encouraging people to come, basically. We've heard about the well, we've heard all about the laws, the different laws that were passed, but the real issues. We're not talking about how NAFTA worked with the economy. We're not talking about how the war on drugs has turned Mexico and South America into a mess. We haven't talked about a lot of other secondary factors that, while they are secondary, they are extremely important, and they do have a significant effect on what's going on. So I did hear some feedback about that. I apologize, folks. Like I said, there's no way, and I've avoided talking about immigration for so long because you can't sum it up in 30 minutes. You can't even sum it up. The only quick way to sum it up is to say you can't sum it up that quick. So I did think it was pretty interesting because one of the things I've been thinking about, you know, a lot of people talk about the changing of our society. Their social norms are different than ours. Well, in some ways, yeah, they are. And we talked about that last week. But, you know, after the show and later this week, I found an interesting article from May talking about how once people of Hispanic origin come to the United States, that they are changing. And specifically, the very interesting way they're changing, has to do with their religion. They are shifting from Catholicism, which is what they come as usually, and are shifting towards evangelical Protestantism. Is that the right way to say that? I think so. The point is that they are adapting. They're changing. And this is proof that in some ways, some of that population is changing. Evangelical Protestantism, that's hard to say for me, is not common in Mexico and South America. Catholicism is. But when they come here, a good portion are changing over. And what's interesting along with that, that's having to do with how often do people go to church? How often do they pray? How often do they, things like do they believe abortion should be illegal in all or most cases? Do they identify or lean Republican? And I think it's pretty interesting to see that obviously there are folks that once they come here do shift to the more conservative lifestyle, the more evangelical, pro-life, Republican, whatever, that many people believe they would not do or say they do not do. And so I guess my point is that it's happening already. People are changing. And certainly we don't want, just to reiterate again, we don't want the people that are sick with crazy diseases. We don't want crazy diseases. And we don't want the murderers, the thieves, all those folks. They can stay in Mexico or South America or wherever they are. They should be staying in a jail in theory. But outside of those folks, if they're wanting to come here to work hard and be productive members of society, not to come leech off of our social welfare rules, then we should be encouraging them to come here and do so. Because that means that we have more productive workers producing more stuff. It makes us as a country more productive. That's a good thing. Anyway, somebody had mentioned it didn't hit some stuff, and I that was just one thing I saw that I thought was interesting, the changing demographics. They are changing as they come here, and that's to be expected. Oh, let's see here. Some other interesting stats and studies and surveys. And so the interesting thing here, this is a survey about how effective Bush is versus Obama, or Bush was versus Obama now. And it's pretty much break even. If you take the margin of error out of this, the only thing that people see differently is that more people believe that Barack Obama cares about people like them than Bush does. Bush did. That's really the only difference. As far as being, and technically speaking, people do see Obama as more trustworthy, but about an equal number of people see him as not trustworthy. And so that's kind of interesting. It's just the margin of those that don't know are more sure that Obama is more trustworthy than Bush is or was. And so that's another interesting stat. As far as being a strong leader, breaks about even, able to get things done, really close, and not able to get things done again, very close. I find it very, very interesting to see people are getting angry, very angry. What is interesting is that independents, those who are independent, do believe that Obama's doing a better job in his second term than Bush did in his second term. I think that's kind of interesting because, I guess I'm lumped into the independent category. And I tend to get what people are thinking and feeling. And I don't know. I don't get the feeling that people really do think Obama's any better than Bush. I think what's happening is people are sick of both. We had that poll from a few months ago. 53% of Americans say they don't believe that the Democrats or Republicans represent what they believe. And I think that's interesting. I think that what you're seeing is a change, a political change. And there's all kinds of interesting things, and you can start going out towards the fringe. And there are people that are convinced that they know that these changes are coming, the establishment knows that these changes are coming. And that's why they're doing all these random drills and FEMA camps and all this stuff. I can't tell you what all that stuff's about. I don't know. Personally, I think it's just a case of runaway budgets trying to justify their existence for yet another year. Because that is how government works, that you use it or you lose it. So they end up using it on the most idiotic things just to justify that budget for yet another year. But I think it's interesting because you have a lot of people that are very, very upset. And there's a lot of people who are trying to make change. On the Republican side, the Tea Party is trying to make change. And they've made some waves. But they've also been shot down in flames by the establishment in a handful of major, major races. They did have one or two major coups this time, no doubt about it. But other than those, you look at the McConnell race, you look at the Cochran race down in Mississippi. The establishment came out and came out strong, real strong. And it's really, at this point, I think interesting because most people are sick of the Democrats and Republicans. There are probably, I would bet you that there's probably not 10% of the electorate that's like, yeah, I really like Mitch McConnell. Or, yeah, I really like Allison Grimes. And they may be individually just well-fine people. They may be. But nobody runs on how awesome they are. Nobody runs on their ideas. They run on how awful the other guy is, and you have to stop the other guy. I mean, my God, if I heard how many people came up to me and said, well, we got to vote for McConnell to get McConnell, make sure Grimes doesn't get in. Or have told me, well, I guess we'll have to vote for Grimes because we want McConnell gone. Ditch Mitch. That's a horrible, horrible way to vote. To be put in a situation where literally you're voting against people. You're not even voting for people anymore. You're voting against them. What good does that do? Really? I have a couple of interesting things. The polls in different states, as far as what the Senate may look like after this election. And I think it's kind of interesting because there are a handful of changes that are probably going to come. Based on what I've been able to read, the pundits, whatnot, It looks like the Republicans may end up with control of the Senate, or they may end up with 50-50 and Biden breaking the ties, which means they don't really have control of the Senate. And I think it's really interesting because you're talking about a pretty significant shift. Now, this isn't abnormal for the party out of power, as far as the presidency is concerned, to continue to gain seats as that presidency rolls along. That's been a pretty common trend. But I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. I have to wonder how many other places, how many other states, and for that matter, not even just the Senate races, but down ticket, Congress, and everything else. I mean, there's only a handful of people that I actually truly personally support running for office. And I've gotten to the point in my life where I don't just vote for people just because to stop XYZ or whatever. I don't do that anymore. You have to convince me to vote for you. And the way to convince me is to tell me, what are you going to do to fix these problems? And I know I can't be the only one out there. I know I can't be. There are so many people that are so tired of being fed BS, of being told, oh my gosh, this is the most important election in history. For the love of God, if anyone ever utters that phrase to me again, I will punch them square in the mouth. Because every election since like 1984, since I can far back remember, people have been using the phrase, this is the most important election in American history. Sorry, after 30 years, it's grown a little thin. Tell us what your plan is. Or you know what? Even if you don't have a complete plan, there are instances where, hey, I'm just going to stop these guys from making it worse. Hey, that's a great plan too. I like that plan. But you better tell me what you're going to stop and how you're going to try to stop it. You've got to convince people like me that what you want to do is better. Because there is a growing apathy out there, and I'm sure the establishment powers love that growing apathy. But as things continue to get worse and the apathy reaches a bottom, I firmly believe that there is going to be a backlash of that apathy and a backlash from those people. And there will be significant change. Significant change. Which in itself could be very scary. Any rapid change is politically scary. But I don't know. I see the Middle East is on fire again. I see the issue in Ukraine is still going and escalating. I don't see a lot of people talking about answers. Because, quite frankly, Americans are sick and tired of dealing with it. At least the ones I know. Everybody rolls their eyes and goes, oh my God, here we go again. We don't have the stomach for another decade-long war. We don't. And if that's your plan, well, I can tell you right now, the public's not going to settle for that. They don't want another war. And you know, all this stuff that's going on, all these changes, all these political changes are causing interesting effects. You know, the Senate, as many of you know, changed the rules on cloture and everything else because in order to saber rattle, there was a lot of filibustering going on. Not that there were things being pushed to solve solutions, just filibustering other stuff. And it's just one example, right? I mean, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this goes because I don't know, man. I see a very big change coming. Regardless of the election outcome this year, for that matter, regardless of what happens in 2016, I don't think it's going to happen this year, and I don't think it's going to happen in 2016. But by 2020, I think given the course that we're on, there will be change. And the real question is, what kind of change will it be? Will it be a good change? or will it be bad change? Because there are bad changes. History is littered with them. Littered with them. You know, dictators, tyrants, take over during times of significant civil unrest and civil dissatisfaction. And we must be very, very careful and very, very vigilant to ensure that that does not happen. Because things will get worse. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But as bad as they get, so long as we have a voice, so long as we have a constitution, so long as we have a Supreme Court willing to say you can't do that, and so long as we have Americans who are willing, not really willing, but would unwillingly defend themselves against an oppressive government, an overly oppressive government. Only so long as we have, do we have any semblance of freedom. All right. Boy, it's almost the bottom of the hour. I got a handful of things to handle after the break, and this is a good little spot to pause the action and get to break. So when we come back, I see we have a caller in queue. I'm going to call them. I'm going to bring them on right after the break. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We're back here in just a few moments.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Run from the killer. Run from the killer.
The world's gone haywire.
Communication lost in the damage.
The world's gone haywire.
Accusation, who can?
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network, and we have a caller in queue. We're going to get to him. If you want to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And without further ado, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Ken. To your point you talked about earlier about between the Republicans and Democrats was the point, you know, I think you're trying to make, or at least I'm trying to wrap around my head, is it being the freest country on the planet, why do we regulate ourselves to Republicans and Democrats? We should have more parties, you know, and it should be tough for third or fourth or fifth parties to get into the race. You know, case in point, there's a libertarian guy, his name's David Patterson, he's running for state senate, or I'm sorry, U.S. Senate, as a libertarian in Kentucky, and he has to get 5,000 signatures to, you know, get on the ballot, and which is, to me, unfair, because the Democrat and the Republican only has to get 2 signatures, if my, you know, understanding is correct, and I don't think, you know, that's right. No, it should, by the way, you know, whether the convention, you know, a Kentucky Libertarian Convention, and they put their candidate on the ballot, you know, here's 2 signatures, you're in. Congratulations. I honestly think, you know, between the Republicans and Democrats, they hate everyone that is a third party or a fourth party or have at you.
Yeah.
It should be, oh, we want everyone. You know, if you qualify, everyone on the ballot as much as possible, because we want to give people a choice. And, you know, the Democrats and Republicans are about power and money. You know, they, Republicans and
right.
Democrats hate each other, but they're more than happy to be in collusion to keep third and fourth party off the ballot. And,
sure.
You know, in my opinion, that's, you know, unfair. To move
no,
on
no
to
doubt.
Another point.
Let me speak to that real
ahead.
Quick, Chris. Let me speak to that. You are correct on the numbers. And, you know, it is a big problem, because the reason you'll hear in response from Democrats and Republicans is, and they'll say this, they'll say, well, we can't have all these people. I mean, gosh, you could end up with 100 people on the ballot, and that would be crazy. Well, first of all, it wouldn't matter. But more importantly, you know, there is a $500 filing fee for U.S. Senate. For that matter, we actually have some of the lowest filing fees in the country, and there's been talk about raising those. So if you're going to charge $1,000 or $2,000 or $2,500 to get onto the ballot, you're not going to have every Tom, Dick, and Harry with a wild hair saying, oh, well, heck, I got $2,500 below. I'll just go run for Senate. That's not going to happen. And so the filing fees take care of the issue of frivolous candidates, is what they will say. The real problem I have with it more than anything is exactly what you said, which is the Democrats and Republicans have built a system that favors them. It's a power protect system. And that is not what we were supposed to have. We were not supposed to have a power protect system. And that system only has been in existence really since the beginning of the 1900s, during the progressive eras when they locked down all the ballot access and changed all the rules to make it harder and harder and harder to actually compete and to run against the system. The people that were incumbents then changed the rules to make sure that they were continued to be incumbents. Go ahead with your point. I'm sorry.
My next point, or not point, my question to you is, Ken, with the gridlock that's going on in Congress right now, do you actually approve that it's happening, that nothing's getting passed, because then other laws and so forth is not being put on us as citizens? Because that's all they do. They make more laws. They never take any off the books. They just throw more laws on it. So is this actually good that there's gridlock in Congress?
There's certainly a case to be made that gridlock is a good thing, especially if it's bad stuff that they're trying to push through and others are trying to stop. Certainly there's that case to be made. But, you know, it's not – they say nothing's going to get done, but that's not really true either. One of the things that has happened is that since the Republicans took the House back over – that's been 4 years ago now – there hasn't been a budget passed. And so instead what they're passing is known as a continuing resolution, which just means, yeah, what we did last year. Right. So we're spending money and it's allocated and it's being spent on the same things that was being spent on in 2009. And so the point is that there are still things, plenty of things that are getting money. The status quo is moving on and continuing on. And there's enough enabling legislation that these regulatory bodies are creating their own new regulations. Certainly we've heard about the EPA and the FDA and all of these other three-letter acronym agencies that are taking the existing law, reinterpreting them, and you can't see my air quotes, but reinterpreting them to then create new regulations and continuing to legislate through the regulatory agencies rather than through the legislative bodies, which honestly I believe is more dangerous than even the legislature acting, because the regulators, they're not accountable to voters. I mean, we just had this huge case in Kentucky with the smoking ban, and the smoking and the health departments were told, no, you may not legislate. You must have enabling legislation, and I applaud that decision. We need a similar decision at the federal level because these regulators are now running the show.
I agree. Last question, and I'm going to listen to the rest of the show. And my last question to you was, I saw a report today that the news media is all happy about Hillary Clinton. She's going to run, blah, blah, blah. And the person, the Republican, which – all right, have at it, Republican, you know, until Gary Johnson can get in office. The one that holds the give her a fight is Rand Paul. So, Rand Paul, support, don't support, let's go Libertarian. Now, Gary Johnson again, which I'm pretty sure Gary Johnson's going to run again because I met him 3 weeks ago and he wants to run again. How do you think Rand Paul against Hillary?
There's been a lot of discussion about that. That's actually a really good question because on back channels and liberty groups and everything else, everybody kind of sees this coming together. Now, on the Democratic side, things have changed just a little bit here in the last couple of weeks where Elizabeth Warren is now really ramping up and looking like she may be a contender. There's also been rumors that Hillary's health is not in the best of shape and that she may not be able to run because of those health issues. Those are rumors, but they're out there. On the Republican side, of course, you still have Rand Paul versus Ted Cruz versus they're still throwing Chris Christie out there. And depending on which poll and where and how, scarily, Mitt Romney still is topping the polls, even though he's not running, which is really goofy. I don't exactly know how they all shape up. Now, if it's a Rand Paul versus a Hillary race, you can play the lesser of two evils game there pretty easily. And certainly the presidential race is a little bit complicated, of course, because it's a electoral college race. So it's really 50 statewide races happening simultaneously. And quite honestly, I think if you have Rand Paul versus Hillary Clinton in Kentucky, I think Rand Paul wins hands down. It would be interesting to see in a theoretical matchup where that would end up.
So, you know, and McCain wasn't a Kentucky senator, obviously.
Right, right. Well, but the Clintons actually do have a lot of popularity in Kentucky. They were, you know, obviously Bill Clinton was the last Democrat to win statewide for president here in Kentucky. Some people blame that on the Perot factor, but I don't think that's the case. I think it was that, you know, George H.W. Bush did not connect with the average Kentuckian in any way, shape, or form. I think that you have it's going to be interesting. I'd be really interested to see a theoretical matchup between Hillary and Rand, because the theoreticals that I'm hearing right now are, you know, having everything in play. Rand Paul becomes a Republican nominee. Hillary Clinton becomes a Democratic nominee, and Hillary actually wins it. Based on electoral college and what states. But I have no real proof of that. That just, you know, it's one of the things people like to throw around and say by any evidence whatsoever. So I don't know how that race would turn out. From my side of things, man, I gave up on the lesser of two games so long ago. 1998 was when I jumped out of that game. It was 1996 was the last time I was pressured into the lesser of two game, and I promised myself I would never do it again, but I don't know. I don't know how that race turns out. I'd be really interested to find out.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that people miss is the fact that, you know, I'm going to vote for lesser of two evils. Well, you're still voting for evil. Why don't we try something new? Oh, new is better. It really is better.
Whereas there was a libertarian who ran and who's running for governor in Arkansas who had a really good video here. It was pretty funny, you know, poking fun at all the things that they say about libertarians, and basically, you know, summarized, hey, we can't do any worse. I mean, and I thought that was a pretty good summary. I mean, given the track record of the D's and the R's at this point, there's really not a whole lot worse that could come out of policy from there.
Well, that was a true statement. You can't do any worse. So, anyway, Ken, thank you for your time. I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Take it easy. Thanks for calling
in.
All
right, bye-bye.
And if you'd like to call in, folks, the number here is area code 858-6826. Again, 858-683-1326. Oh, let's see here. Speaking of candidates, Chris mentioned the difficulty in the signature collection stuff. Independent candidate Marksberry dropped out of the race this week. He was originally a Democrat, and when the Democratic Party establishment all lined up behind Allison Grimes, he said, well, this is a bunch of crap, and jumped out and running as an independent. What a lot of people find out is that 5,000 signature requirement is really, really hard. It's really hard. Take it from someone who's done it. It is extremely difficult to go and get 5,000 signatures and verify those signatures. And trust me, I'm doing it now. So it is a brutal, brutal process. And the point being that Ed Marksberry, independent candidate, spoke at Fancy Farm last year, Democrat, bowed out. And that's what it is, and it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of what's going on. So, you know, I don't know what else to say other than our system is very broken, and Ed Marksberry, who was running, for all intents and purposes, a real campaign, whether you agreed with him or not, has been forced out of the race due to the 5,000 signature requirement. It's what it is. Oh, boy. There's a study done that shows a high rate of corruption in Kentucky. And I'm sure everybody in the audience is shocked, and oh my God, they're falling on the ground to hear that there's a high amount of corruption in Kentucky. I'm sure everyone is just flabbergasted. Seriously, though. Interestingly, though, what this means, and this is the part that gets me, the amount of money that is wasted through corruption, the average Kentuckian could have saved an average of $1,308 per year per person just by lowering the levels of corruption to the national average. That's not even getting rid of the whole thing. That's just going to the national average. $1,308 more than corruption costs everybody else. And, I mean, hey, I don't know about you. I'm married. I got three kids. I can take another, what would that be, $7,500 in my pocket? I'm sure you could, too. You could. You probably would be with another $1,300 in your pocket, right? This is the reality. And you know, I was talking with a friend of mine here not long ago about people that, well, I'm not interested in politics. I don't get into that. I don't watch it. I don't follow it. I don't know what I, you know, I don't get involved. People, it's costing you money. Do you realize this is money out of your pocket? When you say, I don't care, you are saying, I don't care that they're stealing money from me to give it to their cronies. That's what you're saying. It's amazing to me. Besides, you know, for me, even if it was just $1, I would be against the corruption because I'm against corruption. But the fact that it also costs each and every person $1,308 a year extra above the normal corruption cost should make people angry. Make people very angry. And if there's a cause that the party should get behind in this state, and the cause that Occupy should get behind in this state, and a cause that everyone who's not part of the corruption should get behind that's a part of the state, it should be to end the corruption. We can argue over the benefits or the negatives, the positive and negatives of any program. We can argue until we're blue in the face. And we do. All the while we're being robbed blind. We're being robbed blind. Stop. Look around. Realize there are things that we all agree on. 90-something percent of us will say, hey, that looks like corruption. I want that to stop. And let's work together on that stuff. That's the way that it just amazes me that people are, I don't get involved. I don't care. I'm not involved in all that. I don't get involved in politics. I don't care. You might want to care, because on top of creating a bunch of laws, on top of all the other silliness, it is money out of your pocket, period. Starting with what I usually, or getting to what I usually start with, the direction of the country. I know people still believe the country is getting worse. Not a shock. Still, you know, not surprised there at all. People really believe that the country is getting worse, and I think they're right. At least I believe. And let's see here. The presidential approval ratings right now, let's see, we're over 50% disapprove at this point still. We're still going up a little bit there. And again, not a big shock. Things are not getting better out there. And I'll tell you, it's amazing. I think that's probably the part that amazes me the most. You know, things are not getting better out there. Things are getting worse. They continue to get worse. And for everything government says, oh, yeah, we're fixing that. Oh, yeah, we're taking care of that. Oh, yeah, we're doing this. Oh, yeah, we're doing that. The reality is it's not getting any better. It's often asked, are you better off now 4 years, better off now than you were 4 years ago? That's a common campaign thing, or, you know, whatever number of years. We're now to the point, I have to ask the question, are you better off than you were at any point in your lifetime? Because for many, many people, things are far worse now than they have ever been. Ever. That's a problem. Again, going back to what I said before, I think that that is what's going to drive a massive political change. There will be political change because nothing is getting solved. No one's even really talking about solving problems. No one. Not even some of the folks I think of as political allies. They're not really talking about, hey, here's how we solve this problem. And maybe that's just because nobody's doing it. I don't know. I can't explain why nobody's talking about how to solve problems. I wish I knew. I don't quite understand why nobody's talking about it. It seems to me like somebody or somebodies who actually came up with a plan. We used to call these things party platforms. If someone had a platform and a whole bunch of people had a platform and ran on it, and it was something that actually talked about, here's how we're going to fix stuff, it seems like perhaps people have reached the point where they just don't trust anything. Maybe they've reached the point where they're just done with it. Maybe they have. I hear that a lot. Promises made, promises broken, every 2 years, every 4 years. Republicans have tried that, contract with America. Democrats certainly have done that with different programs, the Great Society, all that kind of stuff. The reality is none of it has actually fixed anything. No promises have been kept. Are things better now than they were? In some ways, yes, they are. I believe that as a nation, we are more socially tolerant than we were 10 years ago. And that's probably a really good thing. Because at the end of the day, who cares what your neighbor's doing? As long as he's not doing it in your yard or making you watch, I really don't care. I don't know about you. I just don't care. As long as they're not forcing anybody to participate, which includes me. I don't want to participate. I just don't care. Do whatever you want to do. Good luck. You know, and if it destroys you, well, that's your own fault. You know, maybe that's that old German Catholic. I mean, that's the way I was raised German Catholic, and German Catholics up here used to always have that attitude. Hey, you do whatever you want. I mean, I think it's stupid, but good luck, whatever. And maybe that's just more of that coming out. I don't know. It just seems to me that there have to be answers. I know there are answers to some problems. I mean, at least I've got an answer. I'm not saying my answer is the right one or the one that needs to be adopted, but I've got an answer. It's better than what everybody else is putting out there, which is rhetoric and bumper sticker slogans. I think the real problem is that the bumper sticker slogans and all that actually do sell. They work. Don't just vote for somebody because they're running as a Democrat. Don't just vote for somebody because they're running as a Republican. Don't just vote for somebody because they claim they're going to do X, Y, and Z. And definitely don't vote for somebody because, well, they're better than that other person, because, dear God, that is the dumbest reason to vote for someone ever. It's like, well, this paper cut's hurting a lot, so I chopped my finger off. Now my paper cut doesn't hurt. I don't know. Like I said, I get frustrated with this stuff because there are so many people who just repeat bumper sticker slogans and mantra at me all day, every day. It's just infuriating. It's a combination of angering, it's disappointing, and it's boring. I think that might be what it is. Maybe it's boring. Maybe that's the problem, that you just get tired of hearing the same stupidity over and over and over. And it's amazing the extent to which people are brainwashed into some of these mantras. I just find it totally amazing. I got 3 minutes left, and I have one story quick to talk about. The Red Stars. When we very first started this show, it was by pure coincidence that some friends of mine that are involved in the Tea Party, who also wanted to be Republicans, were given Red Stars and were not allowed to participate in Republican Party elections. That's the standard they applied. Because even our friend and fellow host on this network, Dale the Truth, was one of those people. And the reason that Dale was given a red star was because he and I were friends on Facebook. That was the reason given. Friends on Facebook. I don't know about you all, but at least at the time, I was friends with a lot of people on Facebook. Anybody who sent me a request that wasn't an obvious spammer? Sure. I've since moved everything to a political page and put all those folks there. But the point is that it's silly, right? The reality is it was done for control. The Republican establishment feared a Tea Party takeover, and so they targeted certain people to make sure that they would not have a voice in Republican Party politics. And that's what it was. The end. Everything else was an excuse. So my friends up in Campbell County, there's a handful of folks that are now challenging the chair of the Campbell County GOP to show them meeting minutes and notes and everything else, all the motions and things that were passed in the last year, because there don't seem to be any minutes. There don't seem to be any notes. There don't seem to be any records of motions made or anything to that extent. And, you know, of course, the media is more interested in beating up on the Tea Party than it is actually, you know, investigating what's going on. I didn't even get to the whole silliness of the media getting all infatuated with this fake Senate candidate when they're ignoring the people that are trying to get on the ballot. Until Marksberry bowed out, they were ignoring him, and they're ignoring the Libertarian candidate. Anyway, the point is, actions have consequences. And I saw this coming a mile away with the Campbell County Republican Party. I knew it was a mistake. I told people that they were making a mistake. I don't know if it's that people don't believe me because I'm not a Republican, or if they just don't think I'm politically savvy or just don't care what I say. That's fine, too. I don't care. Doesn't hurt my feelings. But it's common sense, man. When you disenfranchise your base gets mad. Funny how that happens, right? So, anyway, folks, that's the end of the show. We're at the end of the hour. I thank you all for tuning in. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Tune in the rest of the week to the other shows on the network. Monday, we're here Sunday through Thursday, 7 p.m. You have Ed Springson and Dale Truth through the rest of the week. And until next week, I bid you all a good week. Take care.